And welcome to the weekend. Each week I invite a keynote Sandler trainer to discuss strategies to improve behavior, attitude, and techniques using the highly successful Sandler training system. And this week my guest sales trainer is Andrew Wall. Andrew from Toronto. Welcome, Andrew. Glad to have you on the show.
Thanks very much, Jim. I appreciate being part of your show.
Andrew's going to be talking with us today about what are some of the growth strategies that he's found successful for his client base. But before we do, Andrew, why don't you give us the backstory? How did you come to discover what Sandler is and become an actual Sandler trainer?
Yeah, it's a great question, Jim. Like a lot of sales executives, I started in sales, did well, took a new job, did well, got promoted, asked to be management, became a sales director. And that was in the energy marketing field, selling natural gas to big businesses. And I was there at the time when it was very young in the industry. So I learned a lot, but I also went through about 6 or 7 mergers and acquisitions. And I eventually got tired of always having to explain to staff, we still love you. The name over the door changed, but you're still employed.
Yeah,
so
right.
I was going to start my own sales and sales management consulting business. I'm a big believer in business planning. And as I was developing my competitive analysis, I came across Sandler training. Huh. I had never heard of Sandler training back then. And when I spoke to other Sandler training business owners about the fabulous content of the Sandler Selling System and our management leadership program, I thought this was a perfect match for my business skills, as well as the world's best content in sales and sales management. So the rest is history. I've been working with companies since 2004 to help them improve.
Wow, that is awesome. Great story, Andrew. So talk to us a little bit about growth strategies. It's a great time of year. Usually as we turn the calendar page to a new year, businesses are looking at their growth model, what worked, what didn't work. Often you're looking for some strategies that might help make next year better than this year was. So kick us off on the topic, if you would.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. You know, as I first meet with prospective clients and I speak to them about their sales team, I often hear from presidents, well, we've got a sales leader, or all the salespeople report to me, they're experienced. So I expect them to know how to grow the business. But unfortunately, from a sales management perspective, it becomes very frustrating. The sales team isn't cohesively entering the marketplace. They're not taking advantage of the company's competitive advantages. And as a result, sales are sluggish and they're taking longer than they should. Discounting happens way too often.
Yeah.
And so typically what we'll do, Jim, is work with a company, and depending on their business acumen, this might be 4 or 6 half-day sessions. And we facilitate a conversation around, you know, key things like, what is it that we actually sell in the marketplace? And some presidents think, well, isn't that funny? But experience tells me that if a company sells 10 different products or services, chances are the salespeople love selling 2 or 3,
right,
and the other 7 or 8 are lagging.
Right, right.
And so when you actually remind the salespeople about what's possible to be sold, it's shocking, but there's a lot of low-hanging fruit that can be taken.
Yeah.
I did this exercise just recently with an insurance brokerage that provides life and business health benefits, commercial insurance, and then personal lines insurance. And you might not be surprised, Jim, as the expert that you are, that they were not cross-selling these services. So simply walking through this exercise was a reminder that there was a lot of opportunity within their own client base.
Right, and there is some low-hanging fruit there. It does seem like a simple question, but it does beg to be asked.
Exactly, exactly. And you know, what are the markets that you want to serve? And what is your go-to market approach? You know, some of our clients sell through distributors. Some sell direct. Some sell online. But is it a conscious decision? And if you allow your salespeople to make those decisions independently, you might be surprised to find that they are actually achieving success totally differently, which is not very efficient in the marketplace.
So when I'm looking at the markets that I serve, is that a basic discussion, Andrew, about demographics? Am I looking for who is my ideal client? What else am I digging around for there?
Yeah, it's a great question, Jim. You know, depending on where you're located, this could be a question of, should you be selling locally, through the state, nationally, North American, or globally? So that's a conversation that needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, what's the path to success? Is it a direct approach, or are you selling through distributors, which is a totally different approach to sales? The next step we definitely get into is, who's your ideal client? You know, within Sandler, we commonly talk about rabbits, deers, bears, and elephants.
Right.
You know, the different size of prospects, what are their characteristics? What do they buy? What's the frequency of the buy? Because lots of times we need to have a mix of rabbits, deers, bears, and elephants. And yet you might find some salespeople that only want to elephant hunt.
Right.
If they have a good year, life is great. If they have a bad year, it's a big zero.
Yeah, it really hurts. Now, that's a great point. And I think how I break out my demarcation between those different stages wages makes a difference. Do you look at it from the perspective of the business's point of view or from your point of view as a business owner?
That's a great point of differentiation. I typically encourage clients to think about how much are they spending with you.
Okay. So I'm looking at an elephant for me might be a small company, but I've gotten a lot of deep penetration.
Absolutely. And, you know, quick little story on that. A number of years ago, I was doing this exercise and one of my clients, a chemical distribution company, they were going after the huge, big, globally known brands. And they did do business with them. But what they realized is when they were working with large, independent, entrepreneurial companies, they actually did more business, had more profits, and it was a more fulfilling relationship. And as a result of this exercise, they tweaked how they prospected and who they went after, and as a result, became more profitable.
So it's really taking a look, as you said earlier, at our strategy, find out what's working, what's not working, and revisiting some basic questions is always helpful.
Absolutely. And most importantly, getting everybody to agree on what will be done.
Right.
So that both the salesperson and whoever is in sales management knows, as we at Sandler call it, the cookbook formula for success. You know, what are the prospecting behaviors that salespeople need to be doing in the marketplace? What's the quantity and frequency so that the goals will be attained? And the sales manager's job, in my opinion, is to help the salespeople be successful.
And I think too often, those of us in sales, we get so focused on results that we don't think about the activities that lead to results. And so in the Sandler process, when we're talking about cookbook, we're asking you to look at the leading indicators that are going to get you the business, not just looking at the numbers you're selling.
Absolutely. I'm glad you clarified that. And, you know, part of that process is for the company to agree on, well, what will the objectives be for growth over the next 1, 2, or 3 years? Often companies are working with us because they want to double their business. So depending on their growth appetite, if they are very aggressive, 25% growth, 3 years, they've doubled.
Right.
You know, if you do a 20%, it's 4 years, and at 15% growth a year, it's 5 years. So it's not for us to tell them what rate they should be growing at, but for them to decide and really to set those goals, as we all know about SMART, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and time-bound.
Yeah.
Set those goals in place for both the salespeople and sales management to know where we're going to drive the growth from.
Andrew made a good point too about what are the most fulfilling clients to do business with, because nothing worse than having an engagement with a client that you're not happy working with. It becomes a death march.
I couldn't agree with you more. It's got to be a win-win.
So the first one was understanding our product and service. Number two, what market do we serve? Number three, what are our client profiles? What's number four?
Looking at what's your competitive positioning in the marketplace, the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. Often when we know our competitors' weaknesses or threats, sales professionals can be prepared to ask better quality questions to their prospects. Obviously, we would never teach our clients to say poor things about the competition, but if you know their weaknesses and threats to their business models, then you can develop better quality questions to engage your prospects and convert those suspects to prospects to clients.
Yeah, I'm thinking if you're a business owner or manager listening to us, how much time have you spent really digging into a SWOT analysis of your competition? And I'm guessing that most people, Andrew, don't spend enough time looking at that. Is that fair to say?
You're bang on correct, Jim.
And how about for you? Is that something you look at on a regular basis?
You know, Jim, the majority of our clients, they've been referred to us. They saw us work somewhere, maybe did a presentation, and they sat down with us. And it's really a decision of, do they try something different or not?
Yeah.
And so there's some opportunities for me to do a SWOT analysis in my business. But quite frankly, it's normally a question of, as an entrepreneur, as a president, do they want to engage an outside expert or not?
I would say the biggest competition we have is probably the sales manager, because I think sales managers think it's my job to do training. Why would I bring someone from the outside in to do it?
I was 29 as a successful salesperson and asked for that next step opportunity. And I was 30 when I became executive director of a $300 million business unit.
Wow.
And I had to hire people, grow them, and develop them. And although I was good at strategy and helping the team to achieve sales, you know, the people management skills were a bit light. And so I just had this conversation with another prospect this afternoon where their VP of sales has 3 sales managers reporting to them, and one of them's not performing very well. And I asked the questions around, well, what development have you helped that person with to be a good manager versus being a good salesperson? And not surprisingly, the line got very quiet.
Yeah, because we don't often think about that. My guest today is Andrew Wall. Andrew, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out and have a conversation with you.
Be happy to speak to you. I can be reached at either andrewwall@sandler.com, A-N-D-R-E-W-W-A-L-L @sandler.com. www.bigblazer.com or on the phone at 905-864-9915, extension 101 in the Eastern time zone.
And I'm Idaho's Sandler trainer, Jim Stevens. Visit our website at www.crossroads.sandler.com and download our free book, Why Salespeople Fail and What You Can Do About It. This is Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement. Welcome to Entrepreneur Radio, where we get to learn more about my heroes of society, independent business owners and leaders. I'm Jim Stevens with Sandler Training, and we've invited Scott Friend. Scott is with CMIT Solutions to join us on Entrepreneur Radio and share with us some of his strategies that have led to success and some of the hardships along the way. For me, the best way to learn is by listening to the stories and lessons of peers who are fighting the daily battle for personal growth and professional growth, and so I'm so honored to have Scott with us today. Full disclosure, Scott is one of our clients, and we're just delighted to have you. Scott, welcome to the show.
Thanks. Thanks for inviting me.
So tell us a little bit about your business. What do you do, and how did you get started?
Sure. So I started a business about a year and a half ago. I got involved into CMIT Solutions. It's part of an IT franchise. So my background is I had 28 years of IT career at a company here locally called Micron. I got a wild hair and had a wild hair for quite a few years to start my own business. So I looked at all sorts of things. I had no idea there was even a such thing as an IT franchise.
Right.
So I ran across CMIT. Long story short, after months of really diving in and doing my due diligence about the company, I got more excited about it. And obviously, I decided to take the leap about a year and a half ago.
So what are the advantages that you see as far as being a part of a franchise?
There is a lot of advantages. The thing I liked and I still like today is I am a local company, but I'm backed by a national-wide organization that really helps me in every fashion of business, from the start of marketing through the vendor relationships that the franchise have already built for me, the processes they bring to the table to help really with all the intricacies of owning a business, and just that marketing and that the name and the brand that's already out there.
Yeah, Sandler also is a franchise. And I wasn't quite sure when I bought Sandler franchise that I would like being a part of a franchise simply because I'm kind of an independent soul, so to speak. Yet I found that right away, the biggest benefit I got was from the network of other people who were doing the same thing I'm doing, learning from other franchisees who are trying to figure out this out. And it really gives you somebody who can chart a course and help you through. Your thoughts on that?
Yes, absolutely. I'd say that today, that is the number one thing that I think is a huge benefit for me is, again, I can pick up the phone and I can talk to peers. I can talk to other owners across the nation and share experiences and get advice and work as teams and groups to help each other. We recently started what we're calling a mastermind group.
Good.
Where a number of us are all getting together on a regular basis and really focusing on each other's businesses and seeing what's working and what's not working. Just huge benefits like that.
So those listeners that might be thinking about having an entrepreneurial urge, take us through, Scott, what were the pros and cons that went through your mind as you were trying to make that decision?
You know, for me, the toughest part was obviously deciding on what business. Once I started focusing on CMIT, it was the second one was, is there really a market here in the Treasure Valley for this?
Right.
Is there a market there? Is it saturated? And again, I had the franchise helped me with that. They helped me get over that hurdle of being, you know, extremely nervous about that. They did it because they have the experience of going into cities all over the United States with very large markets and still having successful businesses start up. And the more I learned about that process and how that really happened, the less worried I was.
Yeah, the more you thought, you know what, I can do this.
Yeah.
So they gave you a business plan, a marketing plan, a go-to-market strategy. And the nice thing about that is it lets you plug and play. People who are entrepreneurial, one of your biggest challenges, I think, for an entrepreneur is that they have the mind to think of things, but they don't necessarily have the detail orientation to put together that plan. So in your case, the franchise provided you with that. So let's shift gears and talk about what your business looks like. So you work primarily with, who's your ideal client?
Yeah, great question. So my ideal client really ranges. It could be a single individual that has what I call a solopreneurship type business. Okay. That's a new phrase I like to use, a solopreneur, where it could be somebody working out of their home, a real estate agent is a great example of that. Somebody who still needs IT support. Clear up two businesses of 100 employees. That's really the businesses I'm focusing on are 1 to 100 type employee businesses that obviously all businesses today need good technology and good IT support and security. So that's where we come in. We really help, you know, businesses understand technology and take advantage of the technology so that it's not a burden. It's actually something that is beneficial to their company. And today I find so many businesses that are just struggling with their technology. And what's really rewarding for me is to be able to go in and turn that around.
Nice. Yeah, I think we've used many, many different IT companies over the years. And the more you use a firm, the more you know what you're looking for or what you're not looking for. And I don't know if this is an actual term, but one of the models that we found did not work for us was more of a break fix kind of model where something would break and we'd call them up and they'd come and fix it. And it's like an open-ended checkbook so that you end up 1 month, you might spend $1,000 and the next month you might spend $100. And it's really hard to budget for that. So tell us about your model. Does it involve that? And I know those are going to happen, but is there an ongoing maintenance factor?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great segue into getting into the details of how we like to work with our clients. Absolutely, we can go in and help somebody on a break-fix model, but that's really a short-term solution.
Right.
So what we know what works and what's been successful for this franchise is a managed service model. So we come in and I don't even like to call it managed services. What I like to call when I talk to prospects and new clients is that we're your new IT partner.
Mm.
We want to be part of your business. We want to be part of your success. So by doing that, we provide managed services. So what we're going to do is we're going to manage your IT infrastructure, your networks, your computers, your servers, whatever you may have, your backups. We're going to make sure things are secure. We're going to really become that all-encompassing IT partner. And we do that with our managed services.
So are you able to observe, manage, and help clients remotely because you're tied into their network?
Absolutely. One of the first things we do is create that capability to remote control in so that if, you know, one of our clients calls, obviously, with a problem, we can get in there very quickly and hopefully resolve without having to actually come on site and spend the time to do that.
So would a homeowner who has a home system be a prospect for you, or is it mostly businesses?
You know, we focus on businesses, but we don't shy away from helping a home user. Again, kind of in the solopreneurship area is where that comes into play. We're not sure our managed services are really a good fit for just a basic home user, but for anybody doing business out of their home,
it becomes much more necessary because the computer becomes the lifeline of the business. What are some of the common challenges that you think people have that your company is uniquely able to maybe solve or help them overcome?
The advantages that I have, again, is being part of a national network. So I'll give you an example. If you're my client, you may be traveling somewhere on business.
Right.
You may go to Boston or Chicago or someplace, you know, around the United States on business, and you may have a problem while you're there with your laptop that is very critical for this trip.
Been there, done that, actually.
Yeah. So you could be in a different location, have an issue, and I'm able to call a local CMIT solutions in your area to come help you personally and help resolve your problem while you're traveling, as one example. Another example is we could be having an issue with a certain server, a certain type of software or system here locally in the Treasure Valley, and we may not have the experience of supporting that, but I'm a phone call away of finding somebody that can help that's part of the franchise.
One of the things that is becoming a common theme in companies, and if it's not, it should be, is IT security. Because I think we all archive private, confidential information from our clients. And when you see these big takedowns of major organizations, several years ago it was Sony, and recently there's been some banks that have been hacked, you think, really, how vulnerable our businesses can be. So what would you say are the top three or four security concerns a small business should be aware of and be asking an IT provider to help make sure they are secure?
Yeah, another great question. So security is definitely where not only myself as, you know, a local CMIT owner, but the franchise itself is really starting to focus more on security as the forefront of what we do. Okay, so today we find that most of the prospects I talk to, number one on their list is I'm concerned about securing my data. I'm very aware of ransomware and other viruses and malicious things that that can happen. I want to prevent that from taking down my business. So we focus a lot around that. And to answer your question about the things that you should be doing, absolutely number one on the list, which most people probably don't think about, is you need to train your staff. It's really people problems. People should be aware of what they should do and not do to prevent problems, like clicking and opening emails, links on emails as an example. Email's the number one way that malicious viruses and malware get introduced into networks. But it takes some training. Some people need to have that understanding on what to do and not do. That's number one on the list. Number two on the list would be backups. You must have good backups. No matter what happens, if you had good backups, you have something to fall back on, right, to hopefully prevent your business from going under if you had a bad event happen. Third would be antivirus, anti-malware on your systems. Good business class antivirus, anti-malware. There's a lot out there. Some of it's okay. Some of it's Walmart brand. Some of it's good. You need to find that happy medium, what's good for your business from an antivirus, which is now being called endpoint protection. So you're going to hear that term a lot more than antivirus and anti-malware and anti-ransomware and anti-whatever. It's really coined into endpoint protection.
So if I'm, like, take ransomware, for example, somebody sends an email that has that virus in it, somebody in my company opens it, now I'm vulnerable. What happens next?
Well, first of all, you have to identify the vulnerability. These things don't happen overnight. A lot of times when you click on something, it's going to infect your network in the background. It's going to hide for weeks on end. It's going to encrypt your data without you knowing. Wow. If your data isn't already encrypted, if you don't already have things in place to prevent this from happening. So it's going to sit out there and do this. Then it's going to come alive when it's all done, and it's going to say, hey, guess what? We own your data now, and you need to pay us to get it back, right, as an example. Yeah. So what can you do to prevent that or to handle that situation would be, first, you know, you need to have things in place that can detect it and find it before it becomes a problem. And that's really endpoint protection. That's software. That's Webroot. That's, you know, some strong antivirus, anti-malware software.
And should we be concerned as consumers about that? Or if we're, can you at CMIT provide us enough security that that's something I don't have to worry about?
I cannot give you 100%, but I can get you close to that. Nothing is 100% because new stuff comes out every single day.
Yeah.
Every single day, new viruses, new types of malware are coming to the forefront. So again, you have to make sure you're partnered with somebody who's staying up on that, who's going to make sure that you're using the right endpoint protection that's going to be updated with all the latest and greatest to really prevent that.
Yeah, so I need to, that would be one reason having that your national brand, because you've got folks in your home office who are constantly staying up to date.
Yeah, absolutely. And we test that all the time. We're managing thousands of systems under the franchise, right? So we know we have a big responsibility. So we have to make sure that our endpoint protection is really good, as one example. Our backup services are really strong. Our cloud presence is strong. All these type of IT things, we have the advantage because we are testing and sharing and improving that across our national network.
And is there something that someone who's listening to us now could do to find out if they are protected or not? Is there an action step you could give them that would allow them to go in and take a look and see if they should maybe give you or someone else a call to help make their network more secure?
You know, there's some things they could do. It would take me a while to explain that. I would answer that question and say they need to find a good IT partner that can tell them that, right?
Yeah.
And most providers will have a service that's usually not very costly or free to come in and assess their situation. That's what we do. We come in and we do an assessment, and we would report back to our prospective clients and prospects that here's what we found. Here's what you're doing. It's good. Here's what you need to improve on to reduce your risk.
So ideally, somebody who is having struggles, maybe their current IT provider isn't quite giving them enough forewarning or education. You mentioned training. They aren't keeping them well trained. The step they should do is give you a call. You'll come in. And what do you charge for that initial analysis?
We don't charge anything for our initial assessment. We'll do a high level assessment where we'll come in and we'll ask a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, you know, we get in front of the people that kind of understand the IT environment,
right.
Have some responsibility there. And usually out of that high level assessment, we can usually get a good understanding on where companies are from a security, from a risk management perspective, from a business continuity perspective, those type of things. If we need to dive in and get, you know, more detail, then we do charge usually an hourly rate to do that.
Do you ever have people that you go into their business and say, you know, you guys are buttoned up, there's nothing I can do to help?
Absolutely. Yeah. We have done that. And surprisingly, we have given an assessment. We've said, hey, you're doing all the right things. Things are really looking good. But I have yet to find a business that I haven't introduced something that they're interested about.
Yeah.
Maybe it's taking advantage of the cloud
right.
more than they are,
right.
as an example, or other improvements that they just don't see. They don't know what they don't know. So it's not hard for me to introduce a few things, talk about a few things to get somebody interested in, hey, maybe there's something that we should be doing that can help our company and our staff and our productivity.
Nice. So Scott, if somebody's listening to us and they'd like to reach out to you and have you come out and give your evaluation of their system, what would be the best way to contact you?
Well, this day and age, you know, it's real quick to just Google us, CMIT Solutions, specifically CMIT Solutions of Meridian. You can find us. We have obviously we have a website, a presence out there. We're on Facebook, or you can call us directly, 208-608-5500.
On Entrepreneur Radio, we share the stories of leaders and individuals who drive change to see how they've achieved success. If you like our content, visit our website at crossroads.sandler.com and see how we can help you. So far, I've been speaking with Andrew Wall. Now, Andrew's going to take us into a little bit more detail and walk us through some of the steps to understand the particulars in having a strategic approach to selling. So, Andrew, you covered a few steps with us already. I need to define my product and service. I need to understand my market. I need to understand my client profiles. I need to do a SWOT analysis on my competition. So what's number five?
The next one would be, what are the business development strategies, which is code for prospecting? And this is something that most salespeople don't enjoy doing, but they need to do.
Yeah.
And they frequently think, well, that's cold calling. I don't want a cold call. And although the telephone is one mechanism and it still works today, we teach about a dozen different prospecting strategies. And what's important is for companies to identify which ones will be most successful for them, what's the frequency that they need to do it so they're in front of enough opportunities, and what is their sales metrics, their closing rates from attempts to conversations to appointments that then obviously moving through the sales cycle to close. So creating those business development activities is absolutely critical so that we can turn sales from an art form into a science and make it predictable.
Yeah, I love that. So I need to really be understanding my close ratios between how many people do I try to reach versus I get to have a conversation with, how many conversations lead to a face-to-face meeting, that type of thing.
Exactly. You've got it bang on.
And in order to do that, in order to figure out what is the right strategy, obviously I'm going to have to measure what I'm currently doing. How do I know what activities I should focus on, Andrew?
No, that's a great question, Jim. I get asked that a lot. And the answer will be different depending on the business that you're in. But in sales, this is a person-to-person approach. So if you have the opportunity to be face-to-face, ideally in person, other times using technology like Zoom Info, yeah. that would work as well. Some people are saying, you know, Andrew, we sell throughout North America. So that's going to be a telephone sale.
Mm-hmm.
Or it could be using LinkedIn and social media. So it's really understanding where is the company's prospect base relative to them and how easy is it to get in front of them. In sales, I think the prospecting activities that allow you to be face-to-face, whether it's doing public speaking, trade shows, conferences,
networking.
Walking cold calls if that's appropriate, networking, that's going to be more successful than telephone or technology.
Uh-huh.
So it's trying to understand what works best for the client and then what has worked well. The larger the sales team that you have, you probably have a couple people that are really good at prospecting. So let's tap into what's already been working and just share it.
That's a great point. So if I'm looking at developing those kind of best practices for my prospecting activity, how important is it that I don't put all my eggs in one basket? Do you find a lot of salespeople tend to do one or two things as opposed to casting a broader net?
Absolutely, Jim. And I like to use a teepee analogy. If we turn the clock back, say 200 years, your home would have been a teepee.
Yeah.
You only have two poles, it's not going to stand. If you have three poles, it'll stand as long as Mother Nature's not too windy. But if you have four poles, it's a lot sturdier. But as your family grows, you need a bigger teepee and you need more poles. So I encourage clients to have at least six teepee poles or prospecting activities that they'll do throughout the year and four that they'll do regularly. In my frame of thinking, regularly is at minimum monthly, but I really mean weekly.
That's a great analogy because it will endure as long as there's a good, strong structure. So we really need to have that diversified approach. Just because one thing seems to be working for you really well, don't put all your eggs in that one basket. Make sure you diversify. Great one. Understanding my business development activities. What else should I be focusing on?
You know, what are the required resources for growth? You know, as companies are succeeding in the marketplace, growth eats cash. And as you're growing, what new resources will the company need? As an example, one of my clients who has grown dramatically working with us using the sales growth strategy, they identified that they would need new trucks. And they're in the waste removal business, environmental waste removal. And their trucks are $750,000 each.
Wow.
So they needed to expand their margins so they could generate their own cash to then buy the trucks that they would need to continue to propel their growth. And then obviously as they're growing, they're going to need people. So as you look at your business, what resources are going to change as you grow? And are you prepared to manage those new opportunities?
I think that's such a great point because oftentimes we just grow organically. We start to grow and we hit that plateau and we're not sure what happened. And I think Andrew's spot on. What often happens in a plateau is I ran out of cash. Growth eats cash. I don't have cash to grow beyond this next stair step. And for me to get there, I've either got to sell more so I increase my cash flow, or I got to go find a way to borrow more so that I can fuel the beast to take it to that next level.
As I'm sure you've had conversations with your clients, Jim, when you are back up against the wall and you need financing, the banks aren't very attractive options.
Yeah, when you need money, they aren't going to loan it to you. It's when you don't need it that they're happy to give it to you.
That's right. So companies need to plan for the growth, whether it's financial, physical equipment, new locations, new offices, new technology, or new people.
I have a couple of clients that are committed to a cash-only business model. But even in that model, I encourage them, you got to go out and get a line of credit because you don't know what the future holds. You might land one of those big jobs that requires you to make an upfront investment. If you don't have the money to do that, you're going to have to pass on the opportunity. So next, we have required resources. What else should I look for?
You know, once you've got that in place, is where do you want to take your company? So what are your 1, 2, and 3 year goals? What's the percentage growth rate you want to have? Put that in stone, set it out, make sure everybody is aware. And growing companies is a motivating place to be a part of. It tells the employees that they have job security. It tells the employees there'll be new opportunities. And particularly with millennials today, they want to have new opportunities on a regular, consistent basis. So growing companies are an attractive place for millennials to work and to stay. And so communicating those, setting those, and making sure everybody knows what's going to happen to the business over the next 3 years is a highly motivating company to be a part of.
So am I looking out at, so by the end of 2018, I'll be here, by the end of 2019 here, by the end of 2020, I'm looking at results. What other metrics am I looking at that could inspire that story for my team?
As I think about some of the companies I've worked with, they've gone into new geographic markets. Some of them have introduced new products and services. So for people that like those challenges, that's an opportunity for employees to grow and develop. Others, as I mentioned earlier in my own career, at 30 years of age, I had the opportunity to manage a team. There'll be people that want to do that. So as your company grows in manpower, your staff complement grows, there'll be opportunities for management leadership roles. And that would be an attractive reason for people to stay. And millennials, you know, are thought to move every 18 months from company to company in North America. So a growing company is a retention strategy for business owners and entrepreneurs. The next one is, where do you see the business in 10, 20, or 30 years? You know, to borrow from Jim Collins in Good to Great, what is your big, hairy, audacious goal? And this should scare you a little bit.
Yeah.
And when you set that out, it's going to attract the right people that want to work for you. And it might scare the C players to leave.
Right. And it does need to be a bit audacious. It needs to be something far out. Like a good example that Jim Collins uses is Microsoft. So when Bill Gates initially envisioned Microsoft, he saw a personal PC in every home.
So true. true. And every once in a while, you know, a client will ask me, well, Andrew, you seem to have built a good business. How did you do that? And I would ask them, well, when you sat down and set out your BHAG for where you wanted the business to get to in 10 years, what did you write to yourself? And often I'd hear some stammering.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't do that.
Yeah.
Well, then your business is performing exactly as you planned it.
Right. And that BHAG, we want it to be something that's measurable to some extent, something that's tangible enough that you can see, hey, I got there. And it often takes some time to figure out what really is that going to be. And it needs to be something that you can be passionate about. Another Jim Collins tool that he uses I find useful here is that hedgehog concept. What am I best at the world in? What am I passionate about? And what's my financial driver? Those three things will help me understand my BHAG. My guest today is Andrew Wall. Andrew, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
I'd be happy to speak to you. You can reach me through my website at www.wall.sandler.com.
That's awesome. Andrew Wall is my guest. I'm Idaho's CEO of Sandler Training, Jim Stevens. If you like this show and want to subscribe to our content, visit us at crossroads.sandler.com/podcast or reach out at 208-429-9275. This is Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement. Andrew, so far we've talked about some of the conceptual things. You've given us some great ideas about how do I take my business and make it strategic in my approach. I'd like to dig down into some of the executable details, maybe give us some specific examples to our approach. But before we do that, let's cover the final strategy in sales growth for a company.
Thanks, Jim. You know, lots of clients will ask me, you know, Andrew, what's the right way for me to create the structure for our sales team? And there isn't a one-size-fits-all. As companies look at their sales team, you know, some organizations are going to have, if it's a smaller sales team, that person's responsible for prospecting, qualifying, closing, retaining, and expanding, sort of a hunter-farmer type of split role.
Yeah.
The challenge there is that some people who love hunting sometimes aren't good farmers and vice versa. So as the company has a larger sales team, they might start to break those apart so that the people that love the pursuit and the thrill the victory, once the victory's happened, turn it over to those that take great care of existing clients. And then as companies grow in their sales team even more, they might start to develop a lead generation or a business development representative type role, which is really code for hardcore prospecting and marketing to generate leads for the hunters. So we have to ask ourselves, what's the right model for our sales team? And then geographically, how are we going to pursue the business? Some of our clients that have a North American prospect base, they're going to start from their head office. And they're going to use technology, whether it's a GoToMeeting or Zoom Info, to qualify opportunities before they decide we should jump on an airplane and meet that prospect face to face. Other companies are going to say, no, I believe in local contact. And I believe there are differences from the Western United States to the Midwest to the East yeah. Coast. And I don't want a Californian talking to somebody from Boston or vice versa. So we have to spend a lot of time with our clients to really ask some tough questions around what's the investments they want to make in their sales team and what is the right step for them.
And I think this plays back to Andrew's suggestion on what is your 1, 2, and 3 year goals, because my business may be growing. You might augment it with people, as Andrew's suggesting. Maybe I need somebody who's good at hunting or somebody who's good at customer service, or I might just need somebody who's a great marketer. Being strategic about how I want to grow my business and understanding what my current structure is a big part of growth. But when you've got a plan for success, then you just work your plan. I love the quote, a plan eliminates the agony of a decision. So if I have a plan like Andrew's suggesting in these 8 to 10 areas, then I know how to execute my plan. Now I'm just going to go to work doing it. So take us through maybe some specific examples, Andrew, of what a company might do if they're listening to the program for the first time. They're thinking about some of this really resonates. Where do I start?
You know, that's a great question. One of the areas that you could take a look at is going into your accounting system, whether it's Simply Accounting or QuickBooks, and printing your customer list from those that spend the most money with you down to the least. And depending on how you classify customer revenues, you may also be able to do what products or services are my customers buying from me.
Mm.
You may have heard of Pareto's Law, where 80% of your revenues are coming from 20% of your your clients.
Right.
And once you really start to hone in on who are the types of companies and customers that I want to work with, that becomes magical. And it's not uncommon that when they print this customer list, there's also a very large percentage of small transactions that, quite frankly, is unprofitable business.
Right.
I call these mice. And I encourage clients to set a minimum bar for the business that you will do of clients. As an example, working with a chemical distribution company that used to buy product samples and give it to prospects. So there was a hardcore expense.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they created this list for me, I saw negative values per company.
Right.
So it was a real eye-opener for them that they should be focusing where their sweet spot is and printing your customer list from most revenue to least. And then what's the breadth of products and services your customers are buying is a great exercise. And I sort of think of clients as A, B, and C. Your A clients, this is the majority of your revenue. They're probably buying 3/4 of what they can from you. Love them. Tell them they're important. Make sure that you're on top of them because your best clients are your competitors' best prospects.
Right.
And those B clients, they're probably buying 25 to 40% of what you could sell to them. These are the people that you want to expand. And within Sandler, we have another analogy for customers that are important. We call it care. Who do you want to keep? Who do you want to attain? Who do you want to recapture? And who do you want to expand? So these B clients that are buying 25 to 40% of your product, this is an opportunity to schedule meetings with them and sit down and not use features, advantages, and benefits of the other products they could buy, but use third-party stories of how other clients are enjoying the benefits of the other products or services they're not buying, and simply ask the question, would these be valuable for your company? So those are two specific applications business owners could take and apply immediately in their businesses.
That's awesome. So I've taken an analysis of my own client base. What next should I look at?
You know, once you know the types of business that is very beneficial for both your clients and yourself, why don't we take a more in-depth look at the marketplace? You know, as I mentioned earlier, I'm in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and there's a Canadian publication of Canadian small business stats. It's actually all the businesses in Canada, and it breaks it down by employee size and by industries. And I believe the United States is very similar to Canada in that a little more than 50% of companies have less than 4 employees. These are the micro companies.
Right.
And then from 5 to 9 is another large tranche, so that in Canada, 72% of all businesses have less than 9 employees. Well, if you were a company that was selling payroll services and your ideal prospect was 50 employees and up, 72% of Canadian companies are not your prospect.
Right.
So you'd want to be taking a look at this in-depth analysis of the size of companies in your marketplace, in your geography that you choose to participate. And you might find, as an example, that your sweet spot are companies from 50 to 100 employees. If you knew that, and if you had a good database, and I'm a big believer in go buy a database.
Right.
Canada, you know, there's Info Canada, Info USA, United States. There's Zoom Info, which I'm also a big proponent of. Go buy as a company the database and ask the database provider only for the prospects that fit your target market. For example, as we're talking about here, the 50 to 100 employees for a company that might provide payroll services.
Right. So if I've done a good, decent job of profiling my client, I know who I'm looking for. I've created a list of the people that are going to be my targets. Talk us through a little bit, Andrew. What's the danger of spreading too wide and not going deep enough, or too deep and not going wide enough?
You know, that's a great question. And I recently read a book called Hidden Champions, written by Hermann Simon, a German professor. And when you take a look at companies, often those that are incredibly focused and they maybe aren't doing one thing radically better than a competition, but they're doing hundreds of little things much, much better. And they know exactly who they want to go after and who they don't want to.
Yeah.
And have great success. And Jim, there's other companies that they actually flourish by having a wide variety of services or products to offer the marketplace.
Yeah.
And I think it's only through analysis of your current client base and who's buying what that will tell you, should you be narrowly focused or should you be broadly focused?
Right. And I think those of us who are in sales, there's a limit to how many people I can accurately manage in my pipeline. pipeline. I think a big mistake salespeople make is they try to go after too much. If I've got 150 people in my database that I'm trying to penetrate, I'm not going to do a good job of dripping on that many people. I need to really narrow it down to what are my top, I don't know what number you would put at it, Andrew. I would put maybe 30, 50 ideal targets and focus on that many each quarter. Your thoughts?
I think that's a great idea. You know, Jim, I heard this idea many times. If you identify whether it's 200 or 250 prospects, and you might use those for, say, a two-year period, and with your suggestion, you know, break those down on a quarterly basis of who you're going to pursue, you'll actually have much more success. Jim, it's interesting, as I look at my own business now, shy of 12 years in business, when I first started, obviously, you want to grow the business and you need revenue, and you'll do business with virtually anybody.
Right.
As time went on, I realized that saying no to some, saying yes to others, actually created more success. And today, more than 10 years in, we've really narrowed our focus. I have the benefit of being in Canada's largest economic region, right, the Greater Toronto Area. It's 30% of the Canadian population and more so of businesses. So I have the luxury of being highly focused. And as I've made that transition over the last 2 years, not surprisingly, our business has been more successful.
You know, I think that's a good page to pull out of everyone's playbook. That is, look at my least productive opportunities. That might be the comfort zone that's keeping you from really the next level growth you want. If you're busy with low-hanging fruit that doesn't bear much, it still takes as much time to harvest that as it does something that is a more rich deposit. So looking for those better opportunities may require you to say no and cull some of your current opportunities. My guest today is Andrew Wall. Andrew, give your contact information in case somebody would like to reach out to you.
Be happy to speak to you. You can reach me at www.wall.sandler.com or feel free to pick up the phone at 905-864-9915, extension 101.
And this is Jim Stevens with Sandler Training. If you'd like to receive my weekly tips on how to jumpstart your professional development, sign up at crossroads.sandler.com. This is Sandler Training, finding power in reinforcement. Welcome back to the Sandler Training Hour. I'm with Sandler trainer Andrew Wall. Andrew is in Toronto. Now, Andrew, Sandler is a trial of ongoing reinforcement and commitment. I'd like you to walk us through some of the frustrations, concerns, or intimacies that have developed in your life through this learned transparency. So what are some of the things you're working on?
Well, Jim, we're going to need a long time for that. If I was to focus on a couple of very key things, when I made the transition to owning and operating my own Sandler business, I learned that entrepreneurs and business owners have a lot of challenges in hiring good people, getting them aligned around goals and visions, and being successful in prospecting, qualifying, and closing. I would have numerous meetings where I would take copious pages of notes, but leave the meeting not able to help the prospect or the company improve, and I didn't get a client. Well, as you know, within Sandler Training, we teach companies how to create a step-by-step process for how they go to market. I call it creating your documented sales process. Some people in Sandler Training call it gate selling. So we have taken the time and effort to identify from the very first conversation using our 30-second commercial until they become a client and many years thereafter. What are the specific steps? Which aspects of the seven-step Sandler selling system should apply at each meeting? And not that I'm creating a memorization of script, but I call them talk tracks. So when I'm trying to identify what are the problems that a prospect might be willing to share, what are some good questioning strategies that will help them and myself to determine, are we the best fit solution?
Yeah.
Obviously, we're going to have to talk about time, energy, and financial investments. Well, if I'm a professional, I should be comfortable saying those things, and I should have an effective way to help prospects understand the return on investment. So in our own business, we've created a documented sales process. And if you were to work on my team and developing business, I would walk you through a 5-page document of our talk tracks.
Nice.
You would receive a written documented sales process that you could use in meetings with prospects to keep you focused on helping them identify the problems we're good at fixing, strategy, structure, staff, and skills, and how to carry that through the 7-step selling system. And then many prospects want to see or understand, if we were to work together, what would that experience look like? So we've created a document, which I refer to as How We Work with Clients. clients. So using what we teach our clients, this has created a competitive advantage. And when I put these three tools together, our closing rate jumped from 30%. The last 7 years, we've now been between 50 and 60%. I'm not bragging, and maybe you're better.
Nice.
But I do believe if a sales team can go into a meeting and say, I don't need this business. I would appreciate it if it makes sense to you and I, but I know whether you say yes or the next person, every other person's saying yes to us.
Right.
And it's that documented sales process or gate selling that has helped us to be much more successful in the marketplace, which means we've had a dramatic impact in our local economy as our companies, our clients grow, hire more people, and invest more money in their businesses.
Right. One of our core values, Andrew, is changing our culture one small business at a time, because I really think that's what we do in Sandler. We come in and through mentoring and tutoring and coaching, a business owner, a manager, and a sales team, we give them the skill set to be able to become intentional listeners, better communicators, which trickles down into how they interact with their family, with their community, with their house of faith. All of those aspects of life are touched when you have a change of awareness in your own life. And so having that mindset of a missionary who's out there to find people we can help is a key part of being driven to find those new clients. And I love what Andrew is suggesting. Too often when you go to work, I don't remember ever being employed by someone. I'm one of those unemployable people. Years and years ago, I had a couple of jobs, but that was as a teenager. But I've been to countless companies where the sales approach, they hire a new sales guy and they throw him a phone book and say, go get him, Tiger. And it's like, okay, now what do I do? 6 months later, the business owner's grumpy because there's no productivity happening. There's no productivity because there's no roadmap. And there's no roadmap because nobody took time to step aside and figure out what are the gates that we do have to go through in order to sell a piece of business. I really like your terminology, Andrew, documented sales process. If I have the documented sales process and I have the talking points, the high level points that any salesperson needs to be able to say these words as you go out on a sales call, it takes that first 90 days and you can ramp up in 2 weeks.
You're 100% correct. And Jim, when you combine that with a sales growth strategy that helps somebody brand new to your business, brand new to your industry, learn your industry, learn your competitive advantages, and what's the most successful go-to-market prospecting strategies with that documented sales process, you're going to find success with new hires to radically improve.
Right.
Obviously, that's great for the new staff that joined your team and for you as a company, because now you're prospering.
Love it. I'm going to ask Andrew to pull out his crystal ball and tell us what the future holds. Andrew, as you look at what's going on in our geopolitical environment, in our economy, and in the world marketplace, things are changing. I've heard it said that if your rate of change isn't faster than what's happening in the public, you're going to get killed. So what do you think we should be aware of or concerned of as we're looking into 2018?
It's a pretty profound question. You know, a lot of my clients are operating within the province. A lot of my clients, when they take a look at their market share, would be in the low single digits. And so it's my profound belief that if you are just a little more focused, a little better than your competition, if your industry is suffering from global impacts, you will outlive and find a better strategy for another day. But if you look outwardly as excuses without spending the time internally preparing your company and your team, you will suffer those adverse consequences, as we've seen far too often in the last 10, 15 years through numerous recessions.
Yeah, the excuse really becomes that self-fulfilling prophecy. It gets me off the hook for trying, and I can just blame the economy. Rather than that, I love Andrew's suggestion that let's look at our market share. If you think of, for example, I have a remodeling company. So in the remodeling industry, Meridian, Idaho is one of the fastest growing cities in the United States, one of the top 10. It's projected to grow by, I heard, 40,000 people a year for the next 20 years. So what impact is that going to have on new construction or remodeling or furnaces or plumbers, any of the trades? And if you think about your company's market share compared to the total dollars that are spent in your geographic area, I bet my remodeling company has less than one fourth of a percentage point of the market share. We could double revenue and only have half a point of market share. So there's more than enough to go around. There's more than enough to have an abundance. And it's all about having the right mindset that says, if I can envision it, I can help make it happen. And I think to Andrew's point, I got to be able to take away some of those excuses. Your thoughts?
You know, I think you're definitely on the right track there, Jim. A company's performing as well as the leadership is, and the leadership needs to have a vision of growth, a vision of success. They need to spend the time making sure they have the right people in the right positions, in the right roles, doing the right things. And that strategy has got to be well executed, well thought of, and extremely well communicated. And then the people have to have the systems and processes in place, whether it's selling systems or operational systems. And then your people have to have the skills. So I believe as Sandler Training globally is helping companies around the world, if you focus more effectively internally, you're giving your company and your staff the greatest opportunity for success, even when adverse external circumstances happen to you.
And I can imagine a listener out there saying, well, I just don't have time to do that. And I think it's amazing. You may not have time to really be strategic, but being reactionary is chewing up far more time than it would spend if you really set aside the time to build a systematic approach to strategic selling the way Andrew Wall has outlined for us. Andrew, one last time, give your contact information.
Be happy to speak to you. You can reach me either at www.wall.sandler.com or feel free to give me a call at 905-864-9915.
And thank you so much, listeners, for inviting us into your world. I'm Jim Stevens, and my calling is to challenge people to resist the status quo. Are you frustrated because you're living with just good enough? Or you feel forced to accept chaos and volatility in daily business and customer relationships? Are you anxious by your career of trial and error, learning the hard way? If you're ready to stand up to the insanity of programmed living, call me at 208-429-9275. That's 208-429-9275. Have a great weekend, and remember, if you measure it, you will manage it.